Watch your breath, please. And come to the golden room. Beautiful room covered in golden light, liquid golden light. Very quiet, very restful. Look at the blue sky. Gaze at the sky. drop your gaze to the mountains and the valley between, covered with light. Shishin is watching to see if the mind loses the object or gets too low, dull. Then it applies the antidote. After a meal, we might feel dull. Then uplift the mind. Because we're planning to leave to this evening, the mind might go to that, and then bring the mind down with thoughts of loved ones who have passed away. Bring your mind back to the golden room and your teacher. Ask your teacher to come. And they lay their hands on your hip. Try to place the mind on the touch of the hand. And try to be content with that. Try to think, this is enough. This is all I need. I don't need to think of other things or plans. This is very precious, most precious thing that could happen to me. Single point, the hands. And slowly bring your mind back to this room. Somebody asked a question. They are teaching Bogjimba classes, which are classes about meditation and emptiness that were developed at Iron Mountain. And then they are teaching other meditation classes, and they are doing Jetsun Kapa retreats. And then they wondered, how could we incorporate these briefer style of meditation into those teachings and activities. We originally designed this program to be walking meditation between the meditations, you know, like maybe 10 minutes of meditation and then some walking or a few yoga poses and then some meditation, and then you go out, and we had fences ready to be mended and stuff like that. Then we had the snow, and then we lost one lady in the first day or something. She fell down, she went home. So I think you can either have discourse between the meditations. I'd try to get up to 18 meditations a day, you know, maybe in a week or 10 days. But if it's a retreat, because that's the tradition, 18 times 10 is what, 3 hours? In 3-year retreat, we kind of determined that about 4 hours was the maximum you could do in a day, even with all day. If you didn't have anything else to do, 4 hours in deep meditation was about the maximum. And then we would do mantras. Mantras are good. You need things between. So mantras or rituals, recitations. Go out walking. Do some yoga. But I think for new people especially, I don't think those long rambling meditations are healthy. I've done them. I've been there. You know, for years, and I don't think they're so useful. You know? So I think they're good for cogitation. I don't think they count as meditation. You know, cogitation. You know, just kind of rambling reviews of your life and stuff like that. You know, but not for seeing emptiness. Okay. All right. So if you were going to teach a Bogjimba class or do a retreat, I think you could incorporate the shorter ones. Just see how it works. I think it would be good. And then rather than encouraging the students to do a whole hour required between classes, say per day, then ask them maybe to do 2 or 3 shorter ones like that. The length, the duration comes, you know. You can get up to 4 hours straight if you do it this way. But if you just try to do 4 hours straight, force yourself, you know, just sit down and say, I'm not getting up for 4 hours. What you do in your mind is just going to be rambling. You're just going to ramble in your mind. You won't be able, you'll get exhausted, and you won't be able to keep your mind on a single point. You know? Okay. We were at a point of talking about how unchanging things were empty. And it has, you know, we started out with time. Sorry, that was a concept. We didn't start out with anything yet. But in my mind, it brings up a very serious question. You know, so we're about to explore emptiness is an unchanging thing, right? It never varies. It doesn't get, you can't say, Nick is gone, you see? You can't say Nick is 50% not coming from his side, or 60% not coming from his side. He's either not coming from his side or he is coming from his side. So if you decide he's not coming from his side, it's 100% of Nick is not coming from his side. It's not as if, you know, in the afternoon he's less not coming from his side, or something like that. So emptiness is a constant. Emptiness doesn't change. Its quality doesn't change, and its degree doesn't change. It's always 100% empty. But that calls into there's a question that arises because of that. The mind, you know, the meditating mind especially, is changing instant by instant. And as you get better in meditation, you see that the mind moves like lightning. You know, the mind, movements of the mind are like lightning, and it's hard to control. It's like holding a bag of lightning bolts or something, and the mind is shifting microsecond by microsecond. It's very hard to pin down. You think you're doing pretty well, and then you're thinking about lunch, and it moves so fast, like you weren't aware of it moving to lunch, right? And then something brings it back, which is karma, right? Something brings it back, and it's hard to even notice that. And in a very good meditation, you feel you get the feeling of the mind. I don't know how to say it. It's flashing in and out of existence. You can feel that. You get a feeling or a sensation of the mind just flashing in and out, or flashing very fast. And the movement of the mind is so fast. In very deep meditation, I guess it's slowed down enough that you can catch it, what's going on. In theory, it's changing every 65th of a second, right? The mind is the content, and the perceptual capacity of the mind is shifting every 65th of a second. So then this really important question comes up. If emptiness is an unchanging thing, how can it be perceived by a constantly wavering thing? You see, if emptiness never shifts, if emptiness has no causes, if emptiness is totally constant and unmoving, how can a moving, organic, alive mind, with blood moving through the mind and, you know, cells deteriorating as we talk, you know, how can it perceive a thing which is unmoving? You know, how's that possible? And then you get into the question of, can an unchanging thing, or can a thing which never changes be projected by the mind? You see, because the mind is changing by millisecond. So how can a mind which is in constant flux, I guess that's the word I want to say. If you meditate deeply, you can become aware that your mind is in constant flux. I think maybe for the first time you're truly aware that your mind is in constant flux, right? How can a thing which is in constant flux be projecting a thing which doesn't change? You see? Is emptiness itself also coming from my mind? Because if it is, how can it be unchanging? You know, the creator of it is in flux. The creator of it never rests for a second, a millisecond. So how can it be throwing forth an object which is unchanging? Okay, let's talk about that. Let's see what he says, and then we'll get back to it. Okay. It's a big question because, you know, they say get your mind quiet enough and you can see emptiness. But it seems to me you'd have to get it quiet down to nothing, right? Or else it would shift and you would lose the emptiness, right? So here we go. Nipa dume che rangshiki me pertena bepa ni. Can we establish that things which never change are also coming from us, that they don't exist by nature, okay, naturally? Did you find Nick? We lost Nick, okay? It's kind of sad. Gopani dang namka tongba sok. He says, Gopani dang namka tongni sok ni. So, these are the classical examples of things which don't change. Okay? These are the things which don't change. He said, etc., but I don't know if there's any more. Okay? It's kind of, he ran out and then he said, etc. But that's okay. Gopani, the Abhidharma Kosha says, Dumachenam sumyangte namkadani gopani. There are three things in the world which are unchanging. Gopani means the two cessations. Okay, cessation is an important idea in Buddhism. Okay, and I don't know how to say it. You can say the permanent ending of something. I don't know if cessation is such a big word. You know, when do we say cessation in normal English? I don't know. The cessation of hostilities. Maybe that's how when we use it normally, but. In Buddhism, it means the permanent ending of something, the forever ending of a negative quality, or some kind of bad thing. Okay. And there's two kinds. There's two different kinds, and they are distinguished by what makes them happen. Okay, they are distinguished by what makes them happen. You probably can't say cause. Okay, what causes them? Okay. The classic example of the first one is that before you see emptiness directly, your understandings, intellectual classroom understandings of how things are coming from you are so strong and so powerful that you are no longer capable of a negative rebirth. You can't go to a hell realm or an animal realm. It's not possible. Okay? The amount of good karma you get just from understanding intellectually that Nick's not coming from himself is enough to keep you out of danger when you die. Okay? That's pretty important. Okay? Just understanding what we've been saying about things coming from you in a good, strong intellectual way is enough karma that you can't go to a lower realm. It's not possible. Okay? That's called a sosota mingi gopa. Say sosota mingi gopa. I learned it in the kitchen one day with Rinpoche. Like I learned everything that way. I was like, Rinpoche, what's a sosotango? What's a sosota mingi gopa? He says, that's a long story. Then you have to kind of trick them into talking about it. So... Sosotak means when you see emptiness directly and when you come out of that emptiness experience, which takes about 20 minutes, say, because of the heavy karma of seeing emptiness directly, we mentioned it, certain amazing things happen to you. Okay, you can see your death. You can see, which we never see, you see, you're never really sure. You never really believe, but you see it. You see your enlightenment. You see the day of your enlightenment, seven lifetimes hence. You see the faces of every living creature, not just in this world, but in countless worlds. Okay? You know you have seen the Buddha directly. You see a Buddha directly. Okay? And oftentimes that person will throw themselves on the ground. That's where prostration came from. Like, until that day, you've never really done a prostration. You know, they have this custom of going down on your knees or going down on your belly. But when you see emptiness and when you meet a Buddha, you gotta put your face in the dirt. You're just compelled to put your face in the dirt, okay? I always think of Moses seeing the burning bush. I don't know exactly what happened, but, Charlton Heston threw himself down on the ground. It's just like that. That's the only example in our everyday life, is that movie, of someone in such awe of somebody that you have to get face down. You have to literally throw yourself on the ground and and not look up. Okay, like that. Very beautiful. And then that's how prostration began. That's how the custom of prostration began. And then now it's just, you know, anyway, I guess it's a good habit, good seed, right? So all of these things happen, which are classified as the four Arya truths. Okay, they are all divided into four categories. The amazing experiences that you have in the hours following the direct perception of emptiness can be grouped into four categories. And those are called the four Arya truths or the four noble truths. Noble is a bad translation, a perniciously bad translation that won't go away, of Arya. Arya means elevated. And it refers to a person, in Buddhism, it refers to a person who has seen emptiness directly. So then the things that happen to them afterwards are grouped into four categories called the four Arya experiences, which came to be called the four Arya truths. Okay, truth of suffering, truth of the cause of suffering, truth of the end of suffering, truth of the path to the end of suffering. But those they're not really truths in that sense. They are experiences that an Arya has after seeing emptiness directly. It should have been called the four Arya experiences. They've been called the four noble truths and mis-explained for 2,000 years. So anyway, having those four experiences happens one by one, which is sosor. Sosor tak means to undergo those experiences individually. So sosor tak minki gopa, the first kind of permanent ending of bad stuff in your being, within you, the first kind of permanent ending of bad stuff within you is called sosor tak minki gopa, which means it doesn't depend on your having seen emptiness directly. Why? You just understood it intellectually in class. You haven't had the direct experience yet. But that's enough to keep you out of a lower realm. Okay? If you get to a certain point of that understanding, you don't have to fear death so much. Okay? So that's called a non-individual experience cessation. Technical word is that. Okay? It doesn't depend on seeing emptiness directly. When you do see emptiness directly for the first time, you are freed forever from three different kleshas, or afflictions of the mind. Kleshas are presented in the opening section of the second chapter of the Yoga Sutra, for example. Okay? Negative emotions. Raga, dvesha, avidya. Raga, dvesha, avidya, raga, dvesha, avinivesha. There's one more.
Avidya,
raga, dvesha, atmako, ahamkara. No, there's supposed to be five.
Avidya, asmita.
Say again. Asmita. Asmita. Anyway, those are kleshas, okay? Those are negative emotions. When you see emptiness directly, you have 84,000 negative emotions. You gain a cessation for three of them when you see emptiness directly. Okay, do you remember what they are?
Doubt about the path.
One is doubt about the path. You saw Buddha directly. You saw your future enlightenment directly. You also see that all the books ever written about emptiness that are, you know, technically correct, are true. All the 200,000 scriptures in Tibet are true. Okay, and then so doubt is not possible. What else is not possible?
Throwing yourself on the
truth. Yeah, tsutim dan tushu chongzingi tawa. Okay, tsutim dan tushu chongzingi tawa. Tsutim means mistaken forms of supposed morality. Tapas. What do you call them?
Harmful
asceticism. Like sitting in the middle of five fires and burning yourself. Or like sticking a trident The classic example is you meditate for a long time, you go on a cliff. Before you get on the cliff, you set a trident face up below the cliff, and then you jump. And if it goes through your forehead and your two shoulders, then you get enlightened. Like that. There was a belief like that. There's still beliefs like that. Stand on your leg for 20 years. And so when you see emptiness directly, you are able to say that those are silly practices. Okay? You directly understand that those are not helpful. And then the third one was what? Yeah, Denzin Kundan. Okay? Denzin Kundan. Which means if someone asked you, is Nick coming from his own side? You would say, no. Then you would say, have you seen that directly? He's not coming from his own side, which is emptiness, right? Mm-hmm. He's not coming from his own side. Have you seen that directly? You would say, yes, I have. This is after you've seen emptiness. And then they would say, when you came out of your emptiness experience and you looked at Nick, was there still a part of you that thought he was coming from his own side? And you'd say, yes, because you have that until you reach nirvana. Okay? That you have for many years until you overcome. You still see Nick as coming from himself, but you don't believe what you see. Or under questioning, you would say, it looks like that way to me, but I know I'm wrong. I know that's just a part of my mind that I haven't been able to clean out yet. Because I did see his emptiness directly before I came out of that emptiness. So those three kleshas are stopped forever because of experiences you've had in conjunction with seeing emptiness the first time. That's called soso tango. So those are the two kinds of permanent endings of your negative emotions or negative events in your life. Okay? And they're both linked to emptiness, right? If you understand emptiness strongly intellectually, you are forever freed from certain negative rebirths. If you see emptiness directly, you are forever freed from certain kleshas. And then over time, you erase the rest of your kleshas. Okay? Mm-hmm. So those are two cessations. You don't have those emotions anymore, ever. And you can't go there anymore, forever. Can that vary? See, can you be less in a hell realm?
No.
Can you have a less... Can you not believe that he's coming from his own side less or more after seeing emptiness directly? No. Okay? All right? So those are called unchanging. Those are two unchanging things. I was in a class with my arch-jealousy object. They tend to stay with you until you're done with that. You know? So he did for 20 years. But he interrupted Rinpoche constantly, which was a bad deed if he did it, and it was inquiry if I did it. Then he would say... He raised his hand, Art Engon, and said, Rinpoche, are all unchanging things absences? And Rinpoche went like that, and he said, you know, you're right. They're all magogs. They're all absences of something. All the ones he could think of were absences of something. Okay? So chew on that. Okay? These two cessations are an absence of something. Absence of a certain rebirth, absence of certain negative thoughts. And then the third classic example of an unchanging thing is namka, which means space. And we talked about that already. I have a ginger candy. It's occupying a certain space. If I remove it from that space, the space is still there. If I fill the space is still there. It's not like the space disappears. It just gets filled. And then it gets unfilled. But the space itself doesn't vary. The space is always there, and the space is always accommodating. It allows things to stay there. Whether it's occupied or unoccupied, it's always open for things. If it wasn't open when it was occupied, it would spit out the thing. Okay? All right? It's always open. Space is always available. And it doesn't change. You could blow up this world with nuclear weapons. You could vaporize it. And the space in which, the space that it had occupied would not be affected, right? So that's an unchanging thing. Those are the classical examples. Those are the three classical examples of an unchanging thing. The two cessations and space. Okay? We just finished one little phrase. And emptiness is another. Okay? Emptiness. So four examples. Emptiness. The fact that Nick's not coming from himself does not vary. It never changes. Okay? Technically, none of these things has been produced by causes. No, I mean, technically they say dumache. Dumache means asanskara, right? Not created by the coming together of causes. But are they projected? So don't they come from seeds in your mind?
Yes.
Don't seeds fire in your mind and you see this thing?
Yes.
Then it's not uncaused.
Emptiness is unproduced, the mind observing it. The realization of it.
No, the observing is easy. That's cause. That's mind. Mm-hmm. The observing is no problem. The observation of emptiness is a changing thing. The state of mind which perceives emptiness has to be a changing thing. That's, you know, blood is supporting it, etc. But what about the emptiness? Isn't it like every other object, an image placed by your mind due to seeds that are in your mind due to your kindness to others? And if so, then isn't it a changing thing that's created by causes and conditions?
Yeah, because never changes. As long as the object is in existence.
Is it possible to project an unchanging thing? So is it possible for a changing, not just changing, constantly changing, never still, which you've experienced while you're trying to meditate, right? The mind is never still. Is it possible for a thing which is never still to project a thing which is never moving?
Sure.
I'm just asking, I'm not a guy.
it's not a projection of me that it's analysis.
Yeah. I don't, yeah, say?
I thought we were making it a positive thing. I guess it's a projected thing.
Can you project an absence?
Yes.
Can you just say mind is a moment of an absence?
He said mind is projecting discrete moments of an absence. What happens to the moment of absence in between seconds of it? It goes out of existence. Blips in and out. It comes in and out of existence. Yeah, it comes in and out of existence moment by moment, right? That's the definition of a nitya. That's the definition of a changing thing. That's the definition of an opposite thing.
All you're talking about is a lack, though. We're not talking about...
Are lacks also projected?
So, conceptualization.
Huh?
Emptiness is a conceptualization.
Well, yeah, there you get into something. Some schools say not. Okay. Now they say the perception, the direct perception of emptiness is a non-conceptual awareness. They call it that. But I think Dr. Moore is right. You have to call it, if concept means it's being thrown forth from my seeds, then it has to be conceptual, I think.
Yeah, are we just projecting a perception of emptiness, not actually?
That's what he said. An image is one thing. Is the image unchanging?
No.
Is it the image of an unchanging thing? Are there any people outside of yourself? Yeah, why? You project it as outside of yourself. So could you project a concept of a non-conceptual thing? Yeah, that's not a problem. I think this is in your mind could produce an image of a non-changing thing, right? I like your school. All right, I'll have what he's having. Uh, Yugen Shepala Teni Dumache. Sir, when we say non-changing thing, what we mean is, they're explaining the word Sanskrita, or something which is brought together by causes and conditions, right? Okay, something which is brought together in space, and the two emptiness and the two cessations are not brought together, are not caused by the coming together of their causes. It's not like water, sunlight, seed, fertilizer have gathered together and produced a sprout. Okay? So they're called non-gathered together productions. Dumache. Okay? Let's take the case, he says, of empty space. Garcha tore katsam ki mega chikla namka she tanye tsamdu. What does space mean in philosophy? It means a megak, an absence of something, which is the simple negation of its gacha. So here's gacha used in a colloquial sense. Okay? Space is the absence of gacha. Tokrek. Tokrek means
obstruction.
You could say obstruction, yeah. Hittable thing. Space is defined as the absence of hittable stuff. Does that, by the way, that still means it's, even when it's occupied, it's the absence of hittable stuff, or it couldn't be occupied, it would spit the thing out. Okay? All right? Space is the absence of hittable stuff, of obstruction. Okay? It's defined that way. Samdu shakpa mato. Chachen nam kenyi rangi shaho nub changi chachen nam dang rangi tseni ki dube chik du yuna. Can we, all through this text so far, we've been trying to examine whether there could be a nick which was inherent in his parts. Okay? We tend to think so when we say nick's arm, nick's head. Okay? That means there must be a nick who somehow has those parts. Got it? Is that the case with space? Does space have components that the word space is used to? Is there a whole of parts with space? And then classically they say yes, because there are the four directions of space. Like, arbitrarily, admittedly arbitrarily, but that's okay. You could say from the space that Geshe Michael is occupying at this moment, there is a south, an east, a west, and a north, right? So that empty place called space has sectors. We can say sectors of space, right? The mind, as with the wood paneling, detects sectors of space, and then it, due to how I've been to others, I get an image of empty space, and then it's projected onto those parts. Okay? I synthesize the sectors of space into a thing called space. Without my synthesis, there wouldn't be a space. It's not possible. Because you can't see the space without looking at the parts of the space. And if you're looking at the parts of the space, you can't see the whole space. So it's not possible. There must be some other space, whole space coming from somewhere, and that's from me, from my seat. I'll say it again. There can't be a space which is only its parts. And there can't be a whole space either. Because if space were whole, and I only saw whole space when I looked at space, I wouldn't see its parts. If I can't see its parts, I can't know what it is. It could be a banana. Okay, if I can't confirm what it is by looking at pieces of it, you know, like steering wheel, windshield, tires, chrome, you know, engine, then I can say, oh, this is a car. But if all I ever see is just car without its parts, I couldn't tell it from a banana. So what we think is going on can't be going on. There is a whole car, But it must be coming from us. It's not in the car. Okay? What we think's going on can't be going on. There can't be sums of sum totals of parts going on unless someone's putting them together. And that's your karma. And that's how good you are to others. So we come back to this beautiful idea that every object in the world is demarcated by your kindness to others. That's really cool, right? Okay. Sharnib namka ni chikta gyorshin detana sharling lu pakpo namka ne nima sharwetse nubling palam chukin namka ne nima sharwar gyorla. So Buddhism has this thing, and you know, classical Indian cosmology says that the world is composed of a central mountain called Mount Meru or Sumeru. And then there are four continents, which are these things here. And the world is a flat disk, which in Sanskrit is mandala, which is why mundo in Spanish. Okay? It means a flat disk. And then the oceans are on top of that. And then there are these four continents, and there's a mountain sticking up. So in this theory, oh, by the way, the Mount Meru has, it's made of gemstone, four different colors of gemstone, okay? We're living in the southern continent called Jambudvipa in Sanskrit. That's a long story. Anyway, we face the sapphire side of the central mountain. And then the sun, they say, rotates this way around the central mountain, okay? So that's why you get, like, in Australia, it would be night, and then in America, it would be day, because the sun is rotating around the core of the Dhruva, the central mountain, right? Which is a name for the central chant, Sushumna, in the Yoga Sutra. The Dhruva is the central core. And then so is it possible for the sun to shine over Australia and America at the same time, even in this system? Oh, by the way, that's why the sky's blue in this part of the world, because we're facing the sapphire. Okay, so you laugh, you know, and you say how quaint, you know. And I don't like it. The Dalai Lama apologizes for Abhidharma cosmology, and I don't like it. People will laugh about your conception of physics in 100 years. They will say you're ridiculous. They'll say your conception of how the earth goes around the sun and the moon goes around the earth was radically mistaken. Okay? Because it didn't take into account kindness. Okay? Really, your systems of astrology or astronomy will be considered as primitive as the Abhidharma cosmology, I hope, in 100 years, or 50 years, or 20 years if you help us with DCI. And they will look back and say, how quaint. And then the Dalai Lama of those days, 16th or 18th, I don't know where he'll be, he'll apologize for the present physics books. Okay. Anyway. So if it were the case that space were inherently the sum of its parts, okay? And it wasn't the sum of its parts because we were making it that way. Then when the sun rose over the northern continent, it would also rise over the southern continent. Because north would be south. Because it wouldn't be necessary to distinguish between north and south to see space. Okay? You could look at the whole without seeing the part. Okay? You could see a car without seeing its parts. That's what we think. You never see a car without seeing its parts. Your eye is going like this, right? You never see a whole car. You can't see a whole car. If you saw a whole car, you couldn't see its parts and you couldn't tell it from a banana. Got it? I don't know why the scripture doesn't say tell it from a banana, but... It should say that. Okay? Dedak dang rang tseng ki tade du dubna cha dan cha chen jame dun shen du gyurwe. If there wasn't the whole of the parts, and there was no connection between some whole and the parts, then... Hey, we're on the last page, by the way. How are we doing? Yeah. We just got it perfect. Choksam deng oki namke cha shen nam selwe shu namka diyo sheng ngu sing yu yu gopale. If there was a car that you could perceive without looking at its parts, which is what we feel is true, then if you took the parts away one by one, down to the last part, you should still be able to see a car. There should still be a car there. Okay? If it didn't depend on its parts. If the perception of the car didn't depend on seeing its parts, you should be able to take away the parts, the goat and the sheep thing, and the cow would be left over. Okay? If the opposite were true, then each of the parts would be the car. And when you turn the steering wheel, the radiator would also turn. Okay? All right. They may be not Denver Mepayin. So that's a... When they get into emptiness, okay, proofs of emptiness, which are infinite, right? The trick is to get into discussing the impossibility of what you think is going on. Okay? You gotta just discuss the impossibility of what you think is going on. If a pen were coming from its own side, then dogs would write. Okay? If aspen were coming from its own side, then everyone who took it would have their headache taken away. Alright? If space were coming from its own side, then your right hand would be your left hand. Like that. If Nick were the sum total of his parts without my thinking of them that way, then I could never see Nick because I couldn't tell who he was different from anybody else in the room because I'm not looking at his parts, I'm looking at the whole Nick. If I never look at the whole Nick and I only look at his parts, then how can I say Nick is there? You know? You never see the back of Nick, by the way. You don't know that he doesn't have, you know, a machine on his back that was implanted by aliens. You know? No, I mean, your mind synthesizes a... I didn't mean to tell. One simple proof of emptiness is that when you look at a cup, you feel like it has a back. You assume it has a back, but you don't know for sure, right? All right. Gashiki toni dendruptu sumwani che shindu mirikte. Now comes a very beautiful question, okay? Is emptiness itself real? Does emptiness itself come from its own side? Okay? Since it's ultimate reality, shouldn't it get some exceptions? You see what I mean? Shouldn't it somehow be special? You know, shouldn't it get to be from its own side? If it's ultimate, if it's the higher reality, which covers all things, you know, shouldn't it at least get the right to come from its own side? Okay? All right? So anyway, he says, che shindu mirikte. People who have said that of all the objects in the world, emptiness is one which does come from its own side. He says, che shindu mirik. Che shindu mirik. Shindu mirik means, improper or wrong to say. Shintu mirik means extremely improper. Che shintu mirik means absolutely extremely improper. Okay? Okay? Alright. Dole, Dr. Tawa Rira Tsandu Zimba ni Lai, Tony Demba Drupa ni Teta Mayino. Lord Buddha said, you can think that your misunderstanding, where you think that Michael is coming from his own side, can be as big as Mount Everest, okay? La means that would be relatively no problem. But yi, very difficult yi, the privative use of yi, you know. But tongni denbar drupa ni teta mayino. But if you came to think that emptiness was coming from its own side, you'd be in big trouble. That would be unfixable.
Okay.
It's, so he's saying it's okay to think Alistair comes from its own side. That only causes you all the pain you've ever had. But to think that emptiness comes from its own side is worse because you could never escape that pain. Okay. All right. It is an unfixable problem. Sor mirung means unfixable. Okay. Deyang toni laang dakshi. It's, for example, like bad deed number 10 in the 10 bad deeds. Okay. There are 10 non-virtues in Buddhism. The 10th one is that you don't believe that if you hurt someone, something will happen to you, and if you help someone, something good will happen to you. The 10th bad deed is that. And that's unfixable, because if you have that, then you'll do the other 9. You will kill, steal, commit sexual misconduct, etc. If you don't believe in karma. Okay. So the worst bad deed is number 10. The worst view is to think that emptiness comes from its own side, because then all the rest is canceled. Okay. All right. De Antoni la dakshi gone chewe cha duma dang tongshi la par kyap chechungi tombe chedo chap duma yepa dang Antoni la ang dakshi gone chewa cha. Can you? Are there different types of emptiness? You got 15 minutes. Hang in there. Are there different kinds of emptiness?
Yeah.
Are all emptinesses the same?
Yes. Qualitatively.
Qualitatively, good answer. Qualitatively, the content-wise, they're all the same. They're all an absence of something coming from its own side. From that point of view, all emptinesses are the same. There's countless emptinesses in the room. There's as many emptinesses here as there are details of objects in the room. Okay? So if you grasp one emptiness, they're all the same. And it feels the same. If you're in the direct perception of emptiness, on the first day that you see emptiness directly, there is no qualitative difference between that perception by you and that by the first Buddha who ever existed. It's the same. You are seeing the same thing. You are seeing exactly the same thing. Okay? There's no difference between the different emptinesses. They're just an absence of anything coming from its own side. But dakshi gone, relative to what they apply to, relative to what they pertain to, there's a difference. The emptiness of Alistair is different from the emptiness of Susie. Okay? Because they apply to different objects. That's all. So he's just saying, if you take emptiness itself with regard to what it applies to, those divisions are endless. Because the number of things in the world is endless. Okay, tongshi la par kyap che chungi tombe cha duma yeba. I don't know. I don't know about that. I guess he's saying whether or not you're able to understand completely the emptiness. I don't know about that. He said, I don't know. Tongshila, the thing which is empty, right? Par, going outwards, kyapche chung, there's a difference in how much it covers the object. Is there? Is there a difference in how much an emptiness covers its object? I don't think so. Let's put that on the shelf. Yeah, but they don't then dembe chi ta de kanu to do my droop. Okay. Then with emptiness also, you can take its parts and examine whether they are together the whole or not without your thinking of them as the whole. Okay? Without your seeds in your mind saying it's the whole emptiness, okay? Is there an emptiness of all the things in this room? Yes. Is it the sum emptiness of all the emptinesses of all the separate things in this room? Yes. Could you see the whole emptiness of all the things in this room if you couldn't see the individual emptinesses of the separate things in this room? No, you couldn't. Okay? But when you're looking at the emptiness of any one of the objects in this room, can you at that time also put your mind on the emptiness of everything in this room? No. It's the same as a car. That's all he's saying. It's the same as a car. Your mind is synthesizing even emptiness. Okay? Tongshi Chuchen Dong Pensin Tume Du Drup Ma Drup Chepe Shete. Yeah, would the emptiness have to depend on its object?
Yeah.
Yeah. Alistair's emptiness. That's a very subtle point, okay? We talked about it the other day. The minute Alistair is born, there's an emptiness of Alistair. Throughout the length of his life, that Alistair has an emptiness. If that Alistair becomes a Buddha, for example, then the emptiness of Alistair as a human is gone. Okay, that's all. So can we say that the emptiness of Alistair as a human depends on Alistair? It has to have some place to be, to rest on. Okay? Chepe shete dole sutra says sukni kyang mi migna suki deshi ni migparta kalagyur. This is beautiful. Sukni kyang mi migna. What's migme mean? Not seeing. What's it called in Sarvangasana? No. Niralambana. Yeah, Niralambana. The Sanskrit is Niralambana. It means no support, right? You're doing a headstand with your arms up, like Dharmamitra. Okay, that's Niralambana. Alambana means a support. It's also the Sanskrit word for an object of perception because that supports the perception of it. They're both called Mikpa. In Tibetan, Mikpa, Alambana. So, near means not, right? So, anyway, there's a very famous mantra to Jetsu Kapa which says, Mingme Tsewi Tenshin, right? Mingme. You have love that sees nothing. You have near Alambana love. That's how the mantra goes. Very famous. What's that mean? He loves people even as he understands that they are flowing from his own mind. Okay. That's a pretty high love. Even as he understands that the people around him are flowing from his own seeds, he still has love for them. Okay? That's pretty tricky. Anyway, sugni kyang mi migna, if even physical matter is mamikpa, niralambana, right? If it's also nothing you can see, if it's not self-existent, all right, you can't see it, all right. If it doesn't come from you, sorry, if it doesn't come from its own side, all right. If physical matter is such that it doesn't come from its own side, then much less mention the emptiness of that physical matter. That's a famous sutra. Okay. Okay, this is cool. We're going to end right on time. This is weird. Okay, I should take a tea. Sumba delel hakton ketuni. End of the chart. Okay, he's got shamatha. Now he turns shamatha to emptiness. And then that examination is called vipassana. So insight and quietude. You can call it insight and quietude. We finished a long week about how to develop perfect meditation. The highest meditation, right? That was the name of the course, get it? We had a long discussion about how to develop the highest form of meditation, concentration, right? That was shamatha, and that's the whole chart, and we got off the chart. And then way up in the right-hand corner, he's turning that shamatha to a particular object, which is always emptiness, okay? You could turn it to seeing horns on your head, and people have. And they did it so well, they couldn't get out of their cave. Okay? You can do that, but it doesn't help anything. All right? We turn that mighty power of meditation to the mightiest object there is, which is the fact that Nick's not coming from himself. And there's no Nick which could be unjustly blamed for stealing. What'd you steal today? The Lindsay Krause's laptop. Lindsay Krause's laptop. This is creating some weird scene, right, for future. Like, you'll be accused of something and we'll all break out laughing. Or something. We're turning our concentration, we're turning that ultimate capacity to concentrate to the question of, is it possible that there could be a Nick that was unjustly blamed for stealing Lindsay's laptop? Okay? And the answer is, there's no such Nick. There couldn't be such a Nick. He deserves everything that happens to him. Good or bad. That's life. That's the way it really is. That's the way it is. Okay? So his final section in the entire way, end of the book, right? The most beautiful and important part of scripture in the world is how do you get vipassana? Okay? What happens now? How do I combine shamatha with this emptiness stuff? How do the two great parts of this course combine in the last 15 minutes? 3 minutes. Well, I almost hit it. Okay? How do they combine? This is the big deal. Okay, here we go. We'll cruise through here. Narsemne semne tap tingenzin gugone shine seni batupsin. We were able, by going through the 9 levels that we described earlier, to reach shamatha. Tsenyipa. Tsenyipa means the real thing. Real shamatha. Why did he say tsenyipa? Yeah, level 9 is not the real thing. It's just an approximation. He had to say the real thing. The full form. The full form of shamatha. We got it. Drupsin, we reached it. Manyambar, and we haven't lost it. That's a bad mind, God. Yepe Shinjang De Tsamgi Laktong Mitop. Just getting Shinjang is not enough. The Shinjang, the mastery or the deep pleasure you get at level 9 is not enough, he says. Not enough. De Tengdu Kansaki Tangme Tabar Tsun. Tsuna. It's not enough. Just to have that high pleasure that comes on when the Ning and Lengi Lungs go. Okay, just that pleasure, that high pleasure of meditation is not enough. Let's take Nick. Nagiku Niga Nick. Nga Shepa Shin, Neshi Chepa Latene. Inside of the meditation, you examine Nick. Okay, if you're Nick. Okay, if you're Anna, you examine Anna. Okay? Tene, pumbo ngai tangdu, ngadzin hengegi sumatarki, ngarangshigi duba tene me. And you struggle to find that there can't be a Nick who is not coming from your own seeds. You struggle to grasp that there can't be a Nick who is not coming from your own seeds. And you can use the pen to yourself. If you need to go off on a shargom for 5 minutes and then come back, that's okay. The pen's not coming this way. The pen is coming this way. And so Nick is the same. But you have to, if you're Nick, you focus it on Nick. So you go off on a little side meditation on the pen, and then you come back and say Nick's the same as the pen. And you look at Nick the same way as the pen. Okay? The barrel, the point, the cover, the clip, Or you could say his body, his mind. Same. They are perceived in one way by somebody with certain seeds, and they're perceived in a completely different way by somebody else. Okay? That means Nick's not coming from himself. Okay? Dupna Deni Kimba Shanki Chungana. Then suddenly it will hit you. And you'll start, you know, you'll start this thing. Where's Nick? You know, where's Nick? Okay? It will be a little scary. Okay? There's no big problem, right? There is a Nick there who's coming from me. And there's a Nick who can shave himself and not Nick himself. But, he's a translator in 300 years into some other language. He'll be like, I don't get that. Okay. And then, but when you, you know, sitting here, you can say, you know, Nick's not coming from himself. I understand that. But when it happens in deep meditation, there's a different experience. It's like a huge deal, you know. You reach a higher plane of reality. You reach a higher reality. And it's indescribable. And it's above this reality. And it covers this reality. And it's indescribable. Okay? But you'll know. When you get there, you'll know. Okay? Something indescribable happens beside what your ex-boyfriend did last week. That's probably emptiness. Okay. Deni ki mikpa jembe ma jeparsong. When you get there, try to remember what happened. Like, try to hold it and don't lose it. Okay? She shingi chingu kat la. Use your, this is beautiful, right? He's really wrapping it up. Use your sheishin. Hold on to the emptiness. Don't let dullness and agitation disturb you. Keep them away. Hold on to the nick that, hold on to the absence of the nick who never could have been there, right? Nyambar shak. Stay in deep meditation, samadhi, right? Jindang shuk shemba dang misawar trotap chena layang neshi chepaso. If your ability to hold on to that nick wavers or weakens, and if the mind itself becomes less sharp, okay, which happens by nature because you get tired. Even over the course of 5 minutes, the quality of the meditation degrades because you get tired. The mind gets tired. To hold a single object is tiring at the beginning. Later, it's sustaining. Right? Then go back to the examination. You can flip over to the pen again and come back again. Okay? So go over to the pen again, check in with the pen, prove that it wasn't coming from its own side, and then come back to Mike or Nick. Okay? Or Anna. Narshin chene, nyeba shuk chen nyeba tse. The strength of your meditation will return. Se chik tu shak. Go into ekagra. Go into a single point on that. Stay single point on that. Single point means just the golden room. Or just the sky. Or just your breath. Or just the touch on your hand. Right? That's meditation. Just remember that, okay? Meditation is a single thing going on. If there's more, then you're not meditating. Okay. Stay one point in on that. Deta one what? On the nick who's not there. On the absence of the nick who's not there. And it feels, it's indescribable. And in the 20 minutes way, in the 20 minutes that you spend on that object, when you reach it, you can save the world. With that, you can save the world. Okay? With that 20 minutes, you can save the world. That's the only way you can save the world. Okay. Necha nyepana jogam tembangne neshi la sope chepa. If your fixation is good, stay in jogam. Stay fixed on the one thing. Neshi sope chepa pena so shinto tamba lungi miyowe nang new chung kyupatabote. Try to stay as deep in your meditation as you can while you go off on the pen. Okay? Don't let it disturb the... Then he says, it should be like a crystal lake where a minnow flips. It goes, flop, you know? So you're just going off for a second on the pen. And then you come back to the crystal lake, which is emptiness. Okay? Nyu-chu means a minnow. Kyuk means darting. Okay? That the trip to the pen should dart over and come back. Okay? Without disturbing the water much. Okay? Deta nechanda sosoto beshira chanya betsuki. Nyuing gombargi. If you keep on that fixation and you keep on your understanding of emptiness, right? Tsuki, nyuning gomba kipa. If you do that for days and months, right? Narshin semne gurimki, jupe tar chepa, ranto kitambe, shinjang kepa chen, nar shine toptu kipini, chilhapashi. Then it will become reflexive, okay? You go into meditation, you start thinking about Nick, and then you go straight to emptiness. Okay, so it will become reflexive. Less and less time needed on the pen. Okay? When it becomes reflexive, then you've got vipassana. That's vipassana. Okay? When it becomes automatic that you reach the Nick who couldn't be there instantly when you start thinking about it, that's vipassana. Yeah. Shilak sungja to gyurpayin sung. Then that's the union of shamatha and vipassana. That's the true union of meditation and emptiness. Okay? And that's what you can use to save the world. Okay. Okay. Bastika. Okay. So we did a really good karma. We talked about the most important thing. All the stuff that happens later, we'll just use these same tools. We have now two tools, right? We have emptiness and meditation. And for the next 10 years, we'll apply them to all the steps of this text, which are like developing kindness and compassion and stuff like that. All right? We'll use those tools as we continue. I thought it would be cool to have the tools first and then use them as we went, rather than, you know, we get them at the end when we're already done. Okay? Okay, so we did a really good karma. If you see these things directly, you really can't save the world, okay? And we all worked very hard. We all got sick. I don't know, the first night I was shivering uncontrollably in my bed, you know, and there wasn't anything to do about it, you know. It was just, that's all the sheets and the sweaters I had. Then we all got sick. And we worked really hard. And Becky and her crew, you know, they worked really hard. You know? And we're lucky, you know, to not die in the middle. You know? No, I mean, it's to have the whole thing go so beautifully for 10 days. It's extraordinary karma. It means you are extraordinary individuals, you know. And we did an extraordinary good karma. And teach it, okay? That's the best thing you can do. The best way to remember it is to teach it, you know? Like if you can't find anybody, just get your dog, you know? Tie him to the chair. Bella needs a babysitter. You can get Bella and duct tape her to the chair. And explain these things to her. But teach, okay? Please teach. Right? Teach. Lots of people said I would teach the poster. Not so many people said I would teach the book. You know? So do them together. You could do a two-part class. You know, you could do shamatha as one five-week, once a night, one night a week thing. And then you could do vipassana as 5 weeks, one night a week thing. I think yoga centers are really good because after a certain hour, normally they're not used, right? So in my experience, people who own them are very grateful. If you come and say, I'll start a class at 8 o'clock, and they don't have to pay more rent, and you say, I'll make it free or something, and then more people will come to your studio, and then they'll probably sign up for you. I'll pitch your alignment class the next day. And in my experience, people who own yoga studios are very, it's like a huge, available, rent-free shtick, you know? Yoga studios after 8 p.m. And then you also have the clientele are normally pretty spiritually minded. So think about that. There's no reason why you can't do, maybe you could team up with another person. One person does Vipassana, one does Shamatha, something like that. Or you split. It's a lot of fun to team teach with somebody, you know. So think about that. Okay, please teach. Okay, we have to keep this thing alive in the world, and it's rare. It's hard to keep it alive in the world. Right? Okay. So we gotta dedicate the karma. Way. Best thing. Way. Best thing to dedicate it to is your teacher's life, right? That they stay with you, okay? Okay. And that you save the world together, okay? All right? The whole world should be happy. And teacher should stay with you, right? So, where's Becky? You gotta do this one, okay? I mean the mouth. Mazamala. Okay.